welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with fellow beat reporter Bob McGinn. I'm back in Wisconsin, Bob. I'm here at McGinn HQ. It's a snowy, windy, blustery, ugly day, and they didn't plow your street yet, so I was skidding my way in here, turning into your driveway. So I've got a bone to pick with the city of Green Bay and their snow-clearing abilities this morning.
You have a well-shoveled driveway to enter, though, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I was out at about 7:30 doing that, Mike.
Good.
Heavy snow.
You need the exercise, Bob.
Yeah,
I guess. This is the time of year where you're not riding your bike anymore.
Right. So, it's brutal weather, Mike, and here we are. You're back in town.
I'm back in town. This is our podcast where we're going to eventually talk about the defense. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, as always. We appreciate their support. But I've been gone for about just under a month. I was home in Connecticut visiting some family and doing some work while I was out there on the East Coast. And in the meantime, both of us got a chance to see a couple basketball games. Well, I saw two. You saw one, right?
I've seen a couple.
Oh, no, you went to a high school game.
I did.
And you also went to a game last night. Tell everybody what you saw last night. What do you got here? What's this program?
I went to the Kolf, K-O-L-F, Sports Center on the UW-Oshkosh campus. Okay. Met my son there, Charlie, and we saw a WIAC tournament semifinal between number 3 UW-Whitewater and number 2 UW-Oshkosh Titans. There was about 900 fans there, I'm guessing, at the 5,600-seat Kolf. Mr. Kolf was a longtime coach of the Titans back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Anyway, nice atmosphere. I expected a great game. The two teams had split during the season. I mean, stats were about even. Whitewater had an unbelievable shooting team. Printed out those stats before we left. Sat in the third row. Titans hammered them, Mike. It was like 24-7 after 6 or 7 minutes and was over. And they won by about 12. We left early to beat the snow. Great night, though. Still fun, you know, but a bad game. You go to a bunch of games, you're never going to know, you know, what you're going to get, but you got to keep going to games, and also you'll see a great one at some point.
So what's next for them now that they won this game? What happens now?
Now they go out to UW River Falls over in River Falls, Wisconsin, on that west end, and they play the number 1 ranked Falcons, I believe it is, of UW River Falls.
In the country? Number 1 in the country?
No, that's in the conference.
Oh, in the conference. Yeah. Okay.
I think River Falls in the country is probably in the top 5, yeah.
Okay.
As Commissioner Gary Carner wrote in the message in the program, sportsmanship is everyone's responsibility. Do your part to keep the WIAC a conference of character. It's a good league, Mike. I love this league. I wish we had space in our paper to cover it more. Like we used to, Mike, I'd say 20 years ago, we had a guy on staff at the Journal and prior to that at the Sentinel before the merger. We had people who did notes on this league. We'd go cover big games a lot, just, you know, large sections. We covered this league. We circulated in all these towns around the state. It's just sad. It really is.
So you've got, in my hand, 2 tickets to the WIAC, 2 tickets to the Horizon League. Where are you going, Bob? I know those are your two leagues that you love.
So the men's postseason tourney?
Yeah.
Right. Whew. Boy, that's a tough spot, Mike. That's a tough call. I don't really know.
I would take the Horizon tickets.
Better players, obviously.
Yeah. And an NCAA tournament berth on the line.
There's an NCAA tournament berth on the line with this league.
The one you can see on television.
I'd probably take the WIAC, Mike.
All right, well, then I'll go to the Horizon League and have a great time.
I'd like to be over in River Falls Saturday afternoon covering this thing, or Saturday night.
So go. How far is River Falls?
4.5 hours.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. It's a good league. It really is. I just wish we could do more of it, more with it. I think everybody on our desk thinks the same thing, but just small, you know, it's a select audience, but it is a heck of a league, and I've always enjoyed covering it before the draft. I get in a, you know, number of guys from these teams who've either been drafted or signed. I got a pretty good list of that, and it's just real fun. It's kind of a tiny little adjunct to the draft coverage, and it's fun to keep up with it.
And which high school game did you go to with Pat about 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, we went out to Denmark. And we saw a Northeastern Conference game, I believe it is now. Marinette Marines at the Denmark Vikings. A gym at Denmark that I covered some games at in the late 70s, Mike. I really hadn't been in there. My son never played out there. We talked about that. And, God, what a game that was. Overtime, high scoring. It was like 82-79. Who won it? Denmark won it, I think. God, I forgot. I think Denmark did. Really well played, rabid crowd, a lot of sportsmanship. Kids played great. I was really impressed with the whole scene at Denmark. It was a great game.
So while I was home in Connecticut, I went to two games at my old high school, Lewis S. Mills High School in Burlington, Connecticut. Really small school. We play in the second smallest division in the state. And I wanted to go see the team because they were really, really good this year. I looked at their record. And when I got home, I think they were 15-1, and their only loss was out of conference to a team that is 17-3 and ranked in the top 10 in the state. And so in the league that we play in, the Berkshire League, they were undefeated. And when I left and I came back to Green Bay last night, they were still undefeated. They finished their regular season 19-1 and 19-0 in conference play. And, you know, for people that are probably almost all of you, unfamiliar with high school basketball in Connecticut. You don't have a lot of height in Connecticut, except for maybe some of the city schools. And so you got, you know, 6'2", 6'3", playing center a lot of the time, maybe 6'4". But God, I was so impressed with the team this year. They had so much height. They were 6'1", 6'3", 6'3", 6'3", 6'5", across the board. And the 6'5 kid was a sophomore, the son of a former Lewis Mills legend who scored 1,600 points in his high school career. He's a 6'5 sophomore, averaging 18.5 points a game, and he's just a man-child. I mean, he's got a face like an 8-year-old and muscles like a high school kid, and you give him the ball in the low block, and it's an easy layup. So I saw them play twice. They really put up a lot of points, and I don't know. You and I have talked about this. You know, some of my friends that I went to high school with have no interest in high school sports anymore, but you and I just love it. It's just fun to watch these kids play and to read about the scores and everything. So I went to two games on consecutive nights, and I had a great time.
Yeah. I'll drag my wife again to the Kohl Center for Championship Saturday. The WIA boys pretty much go every year, buy some decent seats from the scalpers out front, and spend a great day. And you lose all track of time and concerns. You know, it's just you go in that. With those high school and the bands and all this, it's just a great atmosphere, and you see five games, man.
What are they? Is it quarters here?
No, now it went halves.
Really? They do 8-minute quarters in Connecticut.
Always in Wisconsin and Michigan, always did until 2 years ago. So now it's a 36-minute game.
Shot clock or no shot clock?
No shot clock.
Yeah, no shot clock either. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was fun. Yeah.
Well, now we got to talk about the music. It was my selection this week. And I chose a song by Santana, Mr. Carlos Santana. It was the most popular song off of his album Supernatural, which came out, I think, 1999. The song is called Smooth, and Santana's obviously playing guitar. And the vocals are provided by Rob Thomas, who some of you might know from, I think it was in Matchbox 20 was the band he was in for a while, which was popular when I was like 12 or 13 years old. Really good song, really good album. I was actually, you know, they mentioned it in the car on the way over here, interestingly enough. This album won 8 Grammys for different, you know, various things. So it's a really good album, Supernatural by Santana, if you have a chance to check it out. But now that we've wasted 9 minutes of your time, we should probably talk about some football. So this is our third podcast, I guess, in this little 3-part mini-series. The first one, we broke down the team and the season overall, sort of a big picture analysis. Last week, we looked at offense, and we went player by player through what the Packers had there. Those two podcasts were done remotely while I was in Connecticut. We apologize for some of the audio issues. We tried as best we could, but there's only so much we can do with the limited technology and Bob being on a phone and me being on a phone. So we did the best we could, but this one should be fine. We're both in the McGinn headquarters. So let's talk about the defense. Where do you want to start, Bob?
Well, let's go in the order, Mike. D-line, linebacker, DB. Okay?
Okay.
Got to stay with the order. All right, so the number one D-lineman was, of course, Mike Daniels. Mike, I gave him a B. And a B is a heck of a grade on the grading scale, right, Mike? Anti-grade inflation, okay? I didn't think Mike played quite as well He almost had the exact same number of snaps, 802 this year, 807 last year. Wasn't quite as dominant. I don't really know why. I mean, pretty close. I mean, let's not say he had a down season because he certainly did not. Every game there were five or six plays in which he would just dominate a guy across from him, trash him, get to the ball carrier, threaten the passer. I wrote if he didn't win with his first move, he was less successful countering to gain an edge or generate a walk back to the passer. I really agree. I thought a lot about that statement. He had to win with that first move, and then he just, I don't know. The second really wasn't there that much. Intensity, unreal. He's a great leader. Mike Daniels, a B.
Yeah, one of the things that really jumped out to me, because I'm, you know, certainly less apt to recognize the technique than you are, was to me it's just his motor overall. You know, there was a number of plays where he might, you know, he might break through the line of scrimmage, but then maybe it's a swing pass to the tailback or a run in the opposite direction. And, you know, there's plenty of guys around the league that would just stop or just sort of jog back to the line of scrimmage, knowing that the chances of them influencing the play that was going the opposite direction are very, very slim. But you could look on film and it seemed like almost every play, now I'm not going to say every play because I'm sure there's times where it didn't happen, but the majority of the time he seems to just turn around and hightail it as fast as he can to try and get back into the play. And there's a number of times where if he's not the initial guy there, maybe somebody else slowed him up, that Daniels would come back 5, 6, 7 yards downfield and shove a guy out of bounds or contribute to a tackle and get a half tackle. So to me, even when he wasn't necessarily influencing plays behind the line of scrimmage, he found ways to continue to, you know, show off his effort and, you know, frankly, some athleticism for a guy his size. And so I'm really impressed by how hard he plays.
Yep. All right, the next in terms of snaps was LaTroy Guyon. I gave him a D+. Started out well. He was really tough to reach block early. He had a bunch of tackles for loss. He fell off. He wasn't as good against the run. He was much easier to reach down the stretch. I don't even remember if he was healthy. I don't know. He kept playing games. I don't really know. You know, his pressures, his first year in Green Bay, 2014, he had 16 pressures in 622 snaps. Last year, it went way down. And then this year, he had one in 527 snaps. Now, that's my definition of a pressure. Nothing official about it, but it's been the same subjective criteria out of my head for all these years I've done it. So I think relatively speaking, you can see he's just, he can't get off a block anymore. He can't beat anybody. So the double team goes to Daniels when they're in nickel and sub, and he's got a single and he can't do anything with it. That's got to change. They got to have a better player there. He's got long arms, 34 and 7/8 arms, Mike. Wow. You know, Mike Turgeback, the D-line coach, has made mention of that. And it's really, I think, the secret to his longevity. Plays hard. Good short yardage player, Mike, as you've discussed many times. You got a D+.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing about LaTroy, it sort of mirrors a little bit of what we said with Mike Daniels, where there's a couple plays a game where he just destroys people. And against the run, you could see that this year. There would be maybe two or three, one or two, depending on the game, times where he would just absolutely bowl over an offensive lineman or shove him to the side and make a play for no gain or disrupt a play and somebody else can make the tackle. So against the run, there's no doubt that he could still contribute in some ways, but he's non-existent against the pass. And, you know, I think that that's why toward the end of the season, and we'll get there in a second, we started to see Kenny Clark more and more. The one thing that I do think LaTroy brings outside of just, you know, pure strength and size is when you talk to a lot of the young D linemen, whether it's Lowry or Clark or even some of the younger guys on defense at other positions, they all said that Guyon is a guy that, even though he's not necessarily the most talented guy on the defense, he's not afraid to try and, you know, speak and ramp guys up before games and things like that, because there's no doubt that he loves to play football and he tries really, really hard. Just doesn't have a lot of the talent that, you know, Mike Daniels has.
Yep. All right, then Kenny Clark, I gave him a C. It wasn't until game 19 that he played more snaps than Guyon. Probably a mistake. I mean, so even Mike Pinnell was playing more than Clark in games 5 to 12. Turned 21 in October. He's a serious guy. He's squatty, 6'2 and a half, 318, very strong. It took him a while to learn blocking, how to recognize blocking schemes and make better use of his hands. But he's got natural leverage at the point. That's what the college scouts said about him last spring. Let's just compare him to B.J. Raji's rookie numbers, okay? In 2009, Raji averaged one tackle every 10.4 snaps. This year, Clark won every 9.9, better than Raji. And Raji had one pressure every 32.4 snaps. And Clark now, Raji had one pressure every 128.3 snaps. Clark this year, twice as good, one every 63.7. So Raji then had a great 2010 season, Mike. By far his best year. Should have been all pro, all everything. Huge part of that Super Bowl team. Best he ever played. Rushed the passer, great. Can Kenny Clark ever rush the passer as well as Raji? I asked a couple scouts about that during that NFC North thing. They didn't think so. But I think he can be a good player. He got a C.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, I've always actually wanted to ask you about the grades, and now that we talk about Kenny Clark, it's spurred my memory a little bit. Do you take into account level of experience when you look at grades?
No.
So in other words, if Kenny Clark was a fourth-year player, would he have gotten worse than a C?
No, it's just whatever he contributes towards the NFL standard.
I didn't know if it had to do with, you know, how experienced you were or anything like that.
No.
Okay. But yeah, Kenny Clark, a guy that all the interior offensive linemen say gets off the ball really, really fast. That's, you know, his best trait, they say, is explosiveness off the line of scrimmage. And, you know, I think he got more and more comfortable as the year went on, and you could see that he just started playing with his athleticism more. And he's another guy that you noted this a couple times in your rating the Packers, that like I said with Mike Daniels, he would chase down plays from behind sometimes and run sideline to sideline. He's, what was it, the game against Dallas, he read that screen really well against Elliott and forced him out of bounds.
Yeah.
That's not a play a lot of 300-pound guys make.
No. Now, is he worth that late first-round pick? I'm not ready to say that yet.
I agree.
He's got to play a lot better than this.
Yep.
But he has a chance. You know, he ran 5.07 compared to Raji's 5.15. So, you know, they're in the same ballpark. Raji's 20 pounds heavier. Raji was a good player, so he's got a way to go to get to B.J. Raji. All right, then we got the fourth D lineman was Dean Lowry. Was he a fourth-round pick, Mike? Yeah.
Yeah, no, fifth.
Fifth? Okay.
Yeah, Martinez was the fourth, wasn't he?
I thought they were both fours.
Oh, maybe they were.
I think so.
Okay.
C-minus for Lowry. Pretty good grade. Wasn't until Pinnell was suspended for that second time that he really got a chance. He only played 213 snaps. But 142 in the last seven games. I thought he was all right. He got his hands up. He's got some quickness. That's what people, you know, the scouts, when they saw him at Northwestern, they said the guy had playmaking ability. I didn't see it all summer. I didn't see it halfway through the year in his cameo stints. But then I started to see it later on. He's 6'5 and a half. He's got the short arms, which are never going away at 31. But he's got a good attitude. I think he's got some pressure as a five technique. He's not a bad player. He's not a great player, but he's a C-minus.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the thing that jumps out to me is just how much he was able to influence passing games by knocking down passes at certain times. His timing seemed to be really good. He knew when he wasn't going to get home that he had to get his arms up, and he you know, looked coordinated enough to knock things down. Works really hard. I think he's still trying to adjust to changing positions, as we've talked about, from what he did in college, you know, moving inside and sub and certain things like that. So I think it was a steady season, but, you know, nothing overwhelming.
All right, and then Christian Ringo, he got a D, only played 75 snaps. You know, he forced the only fumble by a D lineman all year, the only forced fumble.
Alex Collins, right?
He stripped him.
Yeah.
Late in that tilt, that route. You know, I don't know, he's the same height as Daniel. He's an effort guy. He's a quick guy. He's not real great at the point of attack, although I thought he was better in training camp than he was as a rookie. So he'll be back in camp. He got a D.
I don't have much to add on that one. Yep. We didn't see too much of him.
No, we didn't. Okay, Brian Price is coming back off the practice squad.
Right.
They re-signed him. Pinnell was claimed by the Jets.
Yep.
So that's their D line. All right. Not too exciting, and... just an average group.
What's after the D-line, Bob?
We go to the linebackers.
Okay.
All right, the number one man is Nick Perry. He got the best grade on the whole defense. He got a B+. No question, his finest year. He broke that left hand in game 12. It would have been a lot better had that not happened. Against the run, he was outstanding. He really was. Not only can he shed people and make tackles for loss, but if he's on the left side, he's so thick that he can absorb a block with his trunk and get that right hand in there and make a tackle for a +3 or +4, which is important. Otherwise, it's +7. Sets a good edge. Pressures, he had 36. Led the team in pressures, Mike. He beat Matthews, Daniels, Peppers. That's a very impressive number, plus the bad hand. He only had his previous high, he had 36 this year, 18.5 as a rookie, so he almost doubled. Does he strike fear into opposing QBs and coordinators? I would say no.
I'm 50-50 on that one.
Okay. I would say no, Mike. He's unrestricted, and they got to make a decision. All right.
I think the thing that impresses me most about Perry is when you look at him and you look at the way he plays, at least to me, maybe scouts would disagree, he doesn't strike me as this explosive, quick twitch guy that can just blow you away with athleticism. A guy that can go and you could put him on a basketball court and he'd be dynamic, or put him on a track and he could do some different things. And so what you mentioned, his ability to shed guys and just consistently make tackles for 1 yard, -1, +2, +3, -2. It's just, to me, that's really impressive, the way he gets off that block and can just slice into the backfield over and over and make plays. I do think it would have been fascinating to see how his season ended up if not for that broken hand. Of course, we'll never know. But to his credit, he found a way to still do something, even with that club on his hand. I think he had 2 or 3 sacks with the club on his hand down the stretch, which, credit to him. That's not easy to do.
All right, Julius Peppers was next outside with a B-. I'm kind of a Peppers guy, Mike. He earned every penny of that three-year, $26 million contract that expired. He turned 37 in January. His playing time was a career low, 58.3%. He played 470 at outside backer, 252 as a D-lineman. He had 3 turnover plays, 1 more than last year, but 8 fewer than in 2014. Led the team in batted balls with 5. He had 32.5 pressures, and that's number 2 on the team. He had 8.5 sacks, that's number 2. He never misses a game. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't really know what the Packers are going to do. I'd think twice about saying goodbye to him.
I was a little bit on the other side on Peppers this year. I thought there were times where he shows up, but then I thought there were times where he kind of disappears for stretches. There's no doubt that he has the ability and the instincts and the savvy to make plays here and there, evidenced by the pressure numbers and the sacks that you mentioned. The thing that I marvel at when I look at Peppers is just, I've only been here 2 seasons, but the fact that the guy has never once been on the injury report. I mean, not even...
Hasn't he?
You can practice every day and still show up on the injury report for a strain or something like that. I don't think he's ever been on the injury report since I've been here. The guy's never been hurt. I remember he told me he's never had a concussion that he knows of. He's never broken a bone. He's just a freak in every sense of the word. And his genes should be studied for years to come by biologists all over the place.
All right, next we got Clay Matthews. He got a C+. I didn't look that up, but I'm sure that's his lowest grade. Injuries limited him to 51.4% playing time. His double team rate was a career low, 22.6 on individual pass rushes. Now, when he stunts inside, I don't even count that. It's when he's individually rushing, is he doubled or singled? Double team rate was lowest ever. Because of his low playing time, partly, his pressure total of 28.5 ranked 5th on the team. Mike, he didn't have 1 great game. Now, the shoulder injury that he got hit on the former teammate Alan Barber in Philly that really limited him for several games. Of the 6 outside backers, he ranked last in tackles per snap, 1 every 22.8. Career low in tackles for loss, 2. He compromises the defense some by flying inside or outside and neglecting his responsibility, his gap, his lane. He can't do that. He's not getting takeaway plays much in recent years compared to his first 3 years. He needs to step it up. What is he, 30 years old? His dad played till he was 40, or his uncle till older than that. I don't know. It's in his genes to play a long time. I think he can turn his career and get back to where he was, but he has to stay on the field. How do you see this number of 52?
Well, I think the statement that you said about Perry, does he strike fear into opposing coordinators? I think as the season went on, Matthews became less and less of a fear-inducing player. Just because, I mean, you didn't have to double him. He wasn't necessarily getting after the quarterback that much. And depending on which side of the field he was on, given his shoulder injury, you could almost write off his ability to pass rush on one side of the field because he couldn't use that arm. So I just thought it was a pretty disappointing season for Matthews all the way around. You know, there's still always going to be that question about what position he's going to play next year as long as the Packers remain, you know, less than ideal at the inside backer position, and we'll get there in a couple of minutes. I don't know, just not a great season for him, but I agree with you. I mean, he's got all the athleticism, all the explosiveness to still turn this around, and to completely write him off and say that his career's done, I think is definitely premature.
Yep. All right, Dayton Jones was the fourth outside backer, and he got a C. You know, kind of under the radar, he had 31 and a half pressures. That's his previous high was 18. Now, he had just one sack of those 31 and a half. He's not a finisher. He doesn't break down well when he breaks through. Quarterbacks elude him. He gets high, he gets low. He does have some pressure. I don't care what you say about the guy. He had 14 knockdowns, almost twice as many as anybody else. A lot of them came on bootlegs. He plays boots well. You know, at the point of attack, scouts like him. When he, as an outside backer, they like him. They think he plays with pretty heavy hands out there, and he can trash people. He's undisciplined. He has penalties, which are a problem, and he will blow things. I kind of like his intensity. I do kind of like his pass rush. Pass rushers should not be discarded. He's lost weight to play outside. He wasn't that bad playing inside. He had 21 snaps with his hand down, 414 standing up. Don't throw pass rushers away, Mike. You got to see.
I thought he had a solid season, you know? I mean, there's always going to be people that view him as underachieving given where he was drafted. And I'm sure, you know, a performance like this is not necessarily what you'd want from, you know, a number one overall pick. What season was that? 2012?
13.
Okay.
Yep.
So, but I agree with you. I thought his ability to get into the backfield was noticeable. You know, a number of the penalties that he did sustain, whether it was roughing the passer or helmet to helmet, were because he got close enough to hit somebody. And so I thought his ability to get into the backfield was good. I think he shows a little bit, not on the same level, but similar ability to shed on the edge sometimes that Perry does against the run. He can be stout there. And, you know, don't forget, I mean, you can certainly plug in somebody else, but the Packers use him on special teams too. They like his athleticism there as well. Uh-huh. So they use him in protection units and things like that on field goals. So he does a little bit of that for them as well.
All right, let's go to Kyler Fackrell next. Fackrell, the rookie third-round pick, he got a D plus. Now, Mike, we'd stand out there in August, and you noticed it probably more than I did, that he looked kind of lost, didn't he?
Yeah, he just, you know, he's a speed guy. You know, that was his game coming out of Utah State. He was going to try and be faster than you around the edge, and that was really it. He didn't have a lot of counters. He didn't have a lot of strength, and it was very clear through the first three and a half weeks of camp that he just didn't know how to get to the quarterback against more talented players. He was getting shoved wide, and it was a tough go for him early this year.
It was. He's 6'5", 245. He's got to get heavier. He runs 4.65. That's why he was a third-round pick. But I'll tell you what. In the regular season, he had 6.5 pressures in 176 snaps. Pretty good, Mike. He has a knack of slipping blocks. Didn't show it in the summer stuff, but he showed it in the fall and winter stuff. I don't know. I'm not really sure where his career is headed. I guess, you know, year two is going to be very crucial for him. But I do think he has a chance. D+.
I kind of like him. You know, I think the way you described it in your little paragraph here, the last sentence is what's key. You wrote that he's a gamer. And I agree. I mean, this isn't a guy that If you were to put him in a line with Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, and you said, okay, you guys are each going to get 5 reps, show us your 5 best moves, I don't think he would look that impressive one-on-one. But when the game goes on and he has to work in between bodies or find a way to beat a guy or set somebody up, he seems to just find a way to get to the quarterback every so often. And I kind of liked it.
He needs strength.
No doubt. I mean, you saw what Morgan Moses did to him that injured his hamstring.
Yes, that's right.
Morgan Moses, the right tackle?
Or left tackle? Right.
Right tackle for Washington.
Right.
Used one hand to just fling Fackrell to the ground, and it hurt his hamstring and cost him 4 games.
All right, number 6 at outside backer, Jayrone Elliott, D+, same as Fackrell. 135 snaps outside, injured early and late, missed 6 games. Healthy scratch for another one, first time. You know, he's pretty valuable on special teams, led the group with 14 despite the reduced play time. He does flash. He had 4 tackles for loss. He had 3 pressures. He can run. They just always hope for more fire from him and more strength. He's played 3 seasons, Mike. He's still at a D+ backup level.
I agree. I mean, I think that I don't know how long they're going to give him chances to keep trying to show it outside linebacker. I think there's no doubt they love what he brings on special teams, and he's a leader there. But you got to wonder if maybe that's just kind of what he is. You know, a guy that is going to be at the bottom of your outside backer depth chart, but can give you stuff on special teams. Is that it for the outside backers?
Yes, it is.
All right, let's take a short break for a word from our sponsor. We'll come back and finish things up with the inside backers and the secondary.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
Well, I've fixed the audio issue, so I apologize for that in the first half of the show. I was the bonehead who forgot to switch one of the settings, and that's why it sounded so grainy. But here we are, good to go. All right, so inside linebacker was a position that the Packers definitely had to address going into the season. They used a draft pick there for rookie Blake Martinez. He played a good number of snaps and was a starter for a decent part of the year. But what did you think of the position overall? Who was the number one man there?
Joe Thomas. I gave him a C+, Mike. I gave Jake Ryan a C and Martinez a C-. So let's start in order. Let's go with Thomas. Started out as the dime backer again for the second straight year. Injuries, mediocre performance by Ryan and Martinez led him to play virtually every snap in games 9, 10, 11, 13, 18, 19. 65.9% playing time for Joe Thomas. Played through a tough back injury. He and Peppers were the only backers to play 19 games. He's small. He's 6'1", 230. Gets knocked around between the tackles. But boy, if a lineman can't get out on him, he will take a good angle and make show some pop and drill somebody. Led the team in missed tackles with 13. Was exposed at times in coverage. He has limitations. I don't think you want him playing 65.9% of the time. But there's some value to Joe Thomas.
No question. I agree with you. This isn't necessarily a guy that is a full-time starter in this league. But I think with the speed that he gives you, he was exposed at times in coverage, but I still think you could argue that of the 3 inside backers they had, he might be the best that they have in coverage between Ryan and Martinez and Thomas. And don't forget, just like Jayrone Elliott, he's a core special teams guy for this team. So I do think that he brings a little bit of value, but I agree with you. You don't want him playing that much, but give him credit, because for a guy that wasn't supposed to play even remotely this much, I think he showed pretty well for himself on the whole.
Yeah. All right, Jake Ryan, the second-year player, I gave him a C. When I did the NFC North thing, I'd have to say that the scouts who know far better than I do, they like him more than I do. I see him as just kind of a stopgap. He's been an adequate stopgap. I don't know that I would say the Packers don't have a top-flight inside backer that they really want. You can't have an all-star team. I get that. But you have to try to push to be an all-star team. And, you know, I think he's replaceable. Now, of the 9 backers on the team, he was number 1 in tackles per snap, 1 every 6.9. He's around the ball.
No question.
You got to give him that.
Especially against the run.
He played like that in college, yep. He loves to compete. I remember they're getting their brains beat in by some team, and in the fourth quarter of that game early in the year, man, he was just running around hammering people. I loved it. He had 6 tackles for loss in the first 8 games, only 2 thereafter. He was up and down in coverage. He's only made 1 takeaway play in 2 years. He's not a very good blitzer. Just doesn't have the size, the speed, the athleticism, and the instincts really to be a special player. He's a C.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think that he definitely finds a way to show up around the run. I remember the inside linebackers coach, Scott McCurley, really worked with him last year on finding ways to take proper angles to the ball, or at least the correct path to the ball. There were times as a rookie where McCurley said Ryan was ending up in the right place, but his path to get from point A to point B was incorrect. He was making it harder on himself. Hmm. And I think we saw a little bit more directness this year when Ryan was in there. There's no doubt that he's not a guy you want in coverage. We first saw that against Arizona in the playoffs last year when, who's their tremendous tailback? David Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, had had a field day really against him on a couple passes. But against the run, he's stout. I do agree with you, though. I don't think they have an inside linebacker that they love.
All right, let's go to Blake Martinez, the rookie 4th-round pick. Gave him a C-. He started at Will Backer in the base and the nickel alongside Ryan. His season changed in game 10, suffered a sprained MCL, missed 3 games, never the same. He played okay as a rookie, but I don't think they really want to count on him as a starter. He's got short arms, 32.5. He's problems shedding in line, gets covered up in heavy traffic. Something of a disappointment, really, in coverage. You know, they talked a lot about his coverage in training camp, but, you know, in preseason exhibition games, but that's the summer game. And in the fall winter game, he bit a lot in play action, out of position, slow to the flat. You know, it's kind of what you can't draft everything, Mike. And when you take guys in the 4th and 5th, unless you get lucky or you make a great pick, you're just not going to really be happy with it. And that's what we're seeing with Ryan and Martinez.
So I think there's kind of 2 ways to look at Blake Martinez's season. I think when you consider the amount of hype that was surrounding him in OTAs and training camp, you know, whether it was the coaches, you know, heaping praise all over him or his teammates, or just the pure number of reps that he took as a starter alongside Ryan, I think when you consider those 2 factors, his season becomes kind of a disappointment. I agree with you, especially in coverage. He was brought in to play the role better than Joe Thomas, and he couldn't do it. I think when you look at it overall, if you took away his performance in the spring and the summer, and you just sort of looked at what he did as a pure rookie, as a 4th-round pick, as a guy that you know, dealt with some injuries, I thought he was okay. I don't necessarily think his ceiling is that high. And like you said, I think eventually at these key positions, you're going to have to try and get a little bit more, a little bit older, I guess is the better way to say it, more experienced, instead of relying on these guys that are hit and miss later in the draft.
So Carl Bradford played about 10 snaps and was horrible, and so he's gone. Somebody signed him, though, right, Mike?
Yeah, he finished the year on the 53-man roster in San Francisco.
Okay. Derek Matthews is coming back off practice squad. You know, he is a hitter. You saw him at the end of camp. He is a hitter.
You've been telling me that since August, Bob.
All right, and then Jordan Tripp ended up on the 53, and he played 5 games on special teams. Never played a snap from scrimmage. He's an ex-Dolphin, Jaguar, and Seahawk.
And Wolverine.
No,
I know. I'm just kidding. Where is he from?
Montana State.
Oh, that's right. Same as Bo Sandlin, weirdly.
Montana State, right?
Yeah, Montana State.
He got an incomplete. You got anything on Jordy?
No. Thought he played hard, but, you know, it's tough to tell on special teams.
All right, so the linebacker, they need some work, Mike.
No doubt about it.
All right, let's go to cornerback. The number 1 corner was Sam Shields. He got an incomplete. You know, I remember talking to him in training camp, and I said, is there anything to prevent you from playing as well as Richard Sherman or something like this, Patrick Peterson? He said no. He thought he was just there, just consistency. Well, he's not that good, obviously, but so he suffered that concussion, huh, Mike?
And that was it?
T.J. Yeldon.
Slammed into T.J. Yeldon, yep, late in the game. I think it was the 3rd quarter or 4th quarter there against Jacksonville. And never cleared the protocol the rest of the season, 5 months.
Heck of a football player. Good guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I don't think he'll end up in camp anywhere, do you?
I would doubt it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. All right, so then the number 1 corner over the entire season was Ladarius Gunter, and he got a C-. Okay, let's go to Gunter. All right. So he went to camp as the number four, ended camp as number four, and he just moved up to 3-2-1. And from game on, he was number one, Mike.
From game four, right?
Game five.
Oh, game five. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I thought five. Undrafted rookie, played 85.7% of the snaps. Shadowed Julio Jones twice, Dez Bryant, Odell Beckham Jr., among others. Competed hard week after week. Just didn't have the speed or the skill to match up. He did his best, forced a couple fumbles, physical. But he was burned a lot. He allowed 11.5 passes of 20 yards or more, which was still 1.5 fewer than Demaryius Randall last year. And he also gave up 8 touchdown passes, way too many. He didn't tackle well after he got hurt late in the year. He had 10 misses, second highest total on the team. Never intercepted a pass, dropped 2. I gave him a C-. He played a lot of snaps for him under duress.
You know, it's really interesting because even with Shields in there, if you take out Demaryius Randall, none of their corners except Micah Hyde can catch the ball. I mean, Shields dropped, what, 4 interceptions in that playoff game last year against Arizona? At least 3. Quentin Rollins has shown that he can't hold on to the football. Gunter showed that this year. And then you look at Hyde, who's got great hands and seems to hold on to everything. And then Demaryius Randall, I think, has the most ball skills out of any of them. Even played a little receiver, I think, in junior college. So it's just kind of interesting that the position overall is not one that seems to have a lot of confidence when it comes to making interceptions. And Gunter, of course, was at the forefront of that. We saw, what was it, in Dallas that he had a chance for 2 interceptions? Or was it Atlanta? I can't remember. But in one of those 2 games in the playoffs, he had a chance for 2 picks, and both of them went off his hands. It was Atlanta. Yeah.
Okay.
One with Julio Jones in the back of the end zone, and the other one was on that that deep ball. Maybe it wasn't Dallas. Maybe it was Dallas. I don't know. I'm all mixed up now. Sorry about that.
Yeah. You know, actually, let's consider Micah Hyde a cornerback, okay?
Okay.
So he was the best. He got a B-. Gunter got a C-. So let's go to Micah Hyde. He was the number 3 safety, just hoping to get some dime safety time when the year started. Ended up playing 80.2%, career high 994 snaps. Played nickel, played the slot. Intercepted a career high 4 passes in the last 7 games. Tough, versatile, heady. He had a great goal line pick against the Browns in August.
And didn't he have another, was it a pick or breakup against the Bears in Chicago on that play where Guyon ran onto the field and almost collided with him?
Yeah, that was a breakup.
It was a breakup. And that was with the Bears having a chance to take the lead in the final minute of that game.
Boy, you're dead right, Mike.
That was a heck
huge.
Of a play. Huge play. Because they would have scored a touchdown with just a few seconds left, or less than a minute, I think it was, or maybe around a minute. And Guyon sprints onto the field late, almost runs right into Hyde. Hyde keeps his concentration and breaks the ball up and forces a field goal attempt.
I mean, he had the pick at the front pylon in Detroit. He had the bubble screen pick against Dallas. These are unbelievable picks. Quarterbacks, receivers got after him, allowed a career-high 7.5, 20 yards or more. Equaled his career high in touchdown passes allowed with 4.5. He's got average speed. He's always going to be trying to be replaced because of it. That time has not come. He should be re-signed. He's a punt returner. He can play safety. He's a good player, and he really needs to be back.
I agree. He strikes me as somebody who has maxed out or just about maxed out all the ability he has outside of his speed. You know, he's not going to be fast, but I think his ball skills, I think his intelligence, his ability to recognize routes and his versatility, I think you could argue on the defense that he gets about as much out of his physical gifts as he can and physical limitations.
Yeah, well said. All right, let's go to Demaryius Randall next. He had a D for dog.
D for Delta.
Okay, yeah.
Our little airplane codes there. Able Baker Charlie.
Delta easy.
People are going to think we're so weird.
56.3% playing time. Mike, that's not very much. He gave up 8.5 touchdown passes. Al Harris was the last corner in Green Bay to allow that many. That was 12 years ago. The last corner to allow more was Craig Newsome with 10.5 in 95. He also allowed 9 of 20 yards or more. He was an easy mark for QBs down the stretch. He looked disinterested, timid as a tackler. He had groin surgery October 22nd, knocked him out of 5 games. That certainly didn't help. He carries himself with bravado, but opponents and teammates can see right through that. Late lining up, not in football position at the snap. He had 2 great picks, stole the ball from Detroit tight end Eric Ebron, ranged way far over on that, to whatever it was, cover 3 or something against Doug Baldwin of the Seahawks. So he can make a magnificent play, but he's kind of a non-competitive for the last year and a half. I don't know. He's gone 2 years, and he's pretty much non-competitive. I don't know where his career heads, Mike.
I agree with you. And one of the things that I think is more difficult, or the most difficult for me, and maybe it isn't for you, and if it's not, feel free to speak up, but I think that since we're no longer allowed to talk to the assistant coaches one-on-one, and in this case I'm talking about Joe Witt Jr., the cornerback's coach, it is really, really hard for us to accurately discern what coverage they're in on every play, because sometimes you just don't know. You don't know who's assigned to what guy. And the reason I bring that up is because there were a number of times, even on plays that didn't go for touchdowns, where somebody would make a catch in Randall's vicinity, and the guy would be open by 5 yards, 6 yards, 7 yards, and Randall would sort of throw up his arms as if to say, well, that's not my guy, or that's not my fault. And I don't know what's going on back there. I don't know if he's forgetting defensive calls. I don't know if he's just out of position. I don't know if there's other players making mistakes back there. But there were a lot of times where Randall looked frustrated or bewildered or confused by the fact that somebody got so wide open in his general area. And that was something that stuck with me all season long. You know, starting as early as week 2 against Stephon Diggs, I thought I noticed that. And it just kind of continued. He doesn't seem to like the physical part of the game, but he seems to like the I'm a number one cornerback part of the game, which is the bravado that you mentioned.
All right, Quentin Rollins, a second-round pick in that 2015 draft. He got a D, as in dog, delta, okay. He played 58.4%. It wasn't good. 4.5 touchdown passes, 8 completions of 20 yards or more, way more than his first year. You know, he showed a lot of potential last year. That's why they let Casey Hayward go after Hayward didn't make a play all year in 2015. But Rollins did not come through. He lost confidence. He wasn't good at the ball. Didn't make any big plays. Tackled okay. Is he physical enough to play safety? I don't know. They don't need a safety. They need a corner. I don't know. He got a D. I really don't know what his future is, Mike.
When I talk to him in the locker room, he strikes me as a pretty sharp guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's pretty smart.
Yep.
And so I think that when he makes mistakes, my guess is it's probably not a lack of understanding of the defense, but it seems to me like he's always just kind of a little unsure of himself. Like maybe he recognizes a certain route, or maybe he realizes this is where the ball is going, but he just questions himself a little bit, it seems like, because he's there, but he's not there. He's kind of in the vicinity, but he's a little bit behind. And so I just wonder if maybe it's a lack of confidence or something like that, but I don't think it's a lack of intelligence, because when you talk to him about football stuff, mm-hmm. whether it's special teams or corner or whatever, he can talk pretty intelligently about it, and I think he gets it. It's just for whatever reason, it's not translating to the field.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. All right, let's go to Dmitri Goodson. He got a D+. Came off that 4-game suspension, and immediately he had to play a lot. Played 145 snaps in 3 games, Dallas, Chicago, and Atlanta early in that first half. Then he blew out his knee, game 10. He would have played a lot after that, just as he was playing a lot then. He would have helped him. I mean, he's a better player than Randall and Rollins were down the stretch.
I think so.
He might have been better than sort of a semi-nicked-up Gunter. So D+, coming off a bad knee surgery, that's Dmitri Goodson.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who fights really hard, doesn't have the physical gift, similar to Gunter in that regard. He tries to work with what he has. Gave it what he had, but he doesn't have quite the skill to cover number one receivers in this league.
All right, Josh Hawkins, rookie, East Carolina, undrafted, made the club, beat out McKinton Dorlant.
Mackinton.
Mackinton, yeah, for the last slot, didn't he? Yep.
No, Dorlant made the 53 too, and then was placed on IR like 2 days later.
Oh, yeah, okay, right, yep, okay. I don't know. We kind of liked Hawkins in August.
Real aggressive, always around the ball, breaking up passes. Picked off Rodgers, I think, in camp a couple times, at least once.
4-3-9. I mean, there's a lot to like. And then he was in there in that early Detroit game, and he made that horrible play against Marvin Jones at the end of the half, 73-yard touchdown. He was banished for months, even though that they needed him. Played 15 snaps in the playoffs. That wasn't very good either. A bunch of penalties on special teams, tied for the team lead with 4. Got benched off special teams. He'll be back in camp. I gave him an F.
You know, Ted Thompson gambled and went pretty young at corner this season, and I think he was wrong to do that in some respects, and I also think they got the short end of the stick in terms of injuries. You know, you look at Shields, out of their control, a concussion, really. Then you look at Goodson.
Shields had a bunch of concussion history, though, Mike.
But, I mean, it's a kind of a fluke thing. I mean, guys make tackles all day long, and that happens to be the one that causes the concussion?
When you got 4, you're going to get hurt.
Okay.
You know.
All right. But, okay. So he gets a concussion. He's out for the year.
Yep.
Goodson with the ACL, you can't really control that one.
No. Nope.
Dorlant with the ACL late in the year, you can't control that one. So they not only did they gamble and go young, but then they have 3 guys go out for the year, essentially, and 2 of those guys, Goodson and Dorlant, probably won't be healthy for the start of next year, I would imagine, at least not training camp. So they're in a real tricky spot because technically they have enough bodies, but they're not healthy bodies.
Nope.
And so I don't know what they're going to do there. It's going to be really interesting to see how they rebuild that corner position.
All right, let's go to Dorlant. He got an incomplete. He had a hammy and then the blown ACL. That was in game 16. Like you said, Mike, he's not going to be ready for late July. He's going to miss the entire offseason. I kind of like Dorlant, you know. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's got a good personality, probably more on the ball than Hawkins, I would say. Sharp kid, pretty quick to the ball. We could see that, but who knows?
I think you wrote it in one of your Rating the Packers, and it was spot on. You know, it tells you just how down they were on Hawkins when Dorlant gets activated from IR, designated to return, and immediately passes Hawkins, not only on the defensive depth chart, but also on special teams. They started using him as a gunner and a hold-up guy and put Hawkins on the bench. So, I mean, they're really down on Hawkins, or at least they were at the end of the season, and they seem to like Dorlant a little bit more, at least at that point in time. So it'll be, you know, he'll be back on the roster, I guess, technically, right? But he'll be what, on the PUP?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, the player that they do like and is their hope is the converted wideout Mr. Herb Waters. He got an incomplete, cut as a wide receiver September 3rd, signed to the practice squad, immediately moved to corner, activated for, what, the last 2 games? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he has size, 5'11 and a half, 192. He ran okay, 4.50, 38 and a half vertical jump. He's got good arm length, 32 5/8 inches. He was a rugged blocker and a good special teams player at Miami, so he could have the toughness for defense. His future, he might be as little as exposure he has, he might be as promising as anybody they got.
I don't know. I got to see him. We've never seen him play corner except in practice a little bit, and that doesn't really count. We got to see him do something against a somewhat of a live rep.
So that's their corner situation.
Not great.
Nope. All right, let's go to safety. Clinton Dix got a grade of B as in boy. Baker played every snap, 1-2-3-9. More of a free safety. A good presence. Made a lot of strides as a tackler, Mike. He missed 16 as a rookie, team high, 9 last year and 3 this year. Missed 3 tackles, and he played every freaking snap.
Yes, he did.
It's really something. Morgan Burnett, by comparison, missed 8. And that's pretty good, too, for a starting safety. All right, he had 6 takeaway plays, picked off 5, didn't drop any. However, he continues to make too many miscues in coverage. He allowed 8 plays of 20 yards or more, well up from 3 a year ago. and back to his erratic rookie form when he had 8.5. Still too much guesswork in his game, and it affects the entire defense. I just don't see him as an honors guy right now, but I think he could be. He's just got to tighten the whole thing up.
Yeah, I mean, he's got all the measurables and the physical traits that you want for the position. He's smart, and there's no doubt that his teammates respect him. They voted him a playoff captain in just his third year, which is, you know, somewhat significant, and he took it very personally and was very humbled by that. I remember him saying that that meant a lot to him. He took a lot of pride in being able to play every single snap this season. That was one thing he talked about going into the year, is he really wanted to be available as much as he could. He was out there more than anybody else on the team. And, you know, solid season. But like you said, every once in a while he makes a head-scratching play in coverage where his angles are really, really poor. Or maybe he I don't know if blows an assignment is the right word, but just kind of doesn't get over quickly enough to the sideline, whatever the case may be. But I think he's got all the potential to be one of the better safeties.
All right, Morgan Burnett, he also got a B. He missed a game and a half. He still played 88.9%, so he's a every down player. He's a highly respected guy, Mike, almost as much as anybody in that room, boy. People like him. Coaches love this guy. He has maximized everything, I think, from a physical and mental standpoint. He's a team leader, wants to win, heart in the right place. You got to like this guy. He led the secondary in tackles per snap, one every 10.2, and the safeties in passes defense per snap, one every 79. His yields, four plays of 20 yards or more, not bad, a little bit better than his career average. Played extensively at inside backer in the nickel. He's not he takes a beating, you know, going against big folks, but it wasn't nothing he couldn't handle. He's a good player. He's a B.
You summed up his season very well. I just want to add this fun little story. This is my favorite Morgan Burnett story of the whole season in the locker room. I remember in like November or something, some of the young guys, Kentrell Bryce, Marwin Evans, you know, those young corners and stuff, we're talking about, you know, going out on a Friday night or everybody going over to somebody's house to do something. And Morgan Burnett was like two lockers over, and he had not been invited. So Morgan Burnett goes over to him, and he goes, "What are you guys talking about?" And they said, "Well, you know," Bryce said, "you know, we're getting together or whatever." And Morgan said, "Well, why wasn't I invited?" And Bryce goes, "Oh, Morgan, no, of course you're invited. Of course you're invited." And you know, young guys in this league, they like to go out and chase girls and all that kind of stuff. And Burnett says, "I see how it is. You guys are just holding it against me because I found the love of my life in high school, and I'm married already."
Really?
Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Morgan's a good guy.
All right. So we got Hyde. We put him at corner. So we'll go to the number three safety now. And that is Kentrell Bryce, the rookie from Louisiana Tech.
Correct.
Yep. All right. Geez, he played 27.4% on defense and a team high 347 snaps on special teams. You could see it. You could see it in exhibition games. He's got explosive strength, big hitting ability, legal vicious hits. No one on the team was a more reckless, violent hitter. Compact, 5'11.5", 199. I mean, he's got all these workout numbers, man. 4.43, vert of 42, bench press 21 times. All right, so he didn't play at a real high level just because he wasn't used to the speed of the game. There was a lot of hesitation in his play. He was late reacting too often. But, you know, his physical attributes were more than evident. He could turn out to be the best player in this whole rookie class. I gave him a C-. I thought it was a pretty good start for Kentrell Bryce.
Yeah, I mean, reckless is not the right word. But the willingness, I guess, to be physical at all times jumps out to me. I remember I asked him once after he had that big, remember that goal line hit he made in Atlanta the first time where there was that, like, bubble screen or something out to the sideline, and it was him at the pylon one-on-one against a running back, and he just stacked him up right at the 1 yard line full speed. You know, Darren Perry called that, you know, one of the better hits he's seen in this league. And I asked Bryce a couple days later, I said, "Have you always been a hitter?" And he said, "You know, yeah, ever since I was little, I just loved, you know, the physical side of it. I loved hitting people." Now sometimes that makes him gamble and try for things that won't be there and aren't there. But there's no doubt. I mean, the range, the speed, all the physical traits are there. I just think he needs to understand the game a little bit better and try not to I think there's times where he needs to just settle for making a tackle rather than trying to make the fumble-producing tackle mm-hmm. or the jarring hit or something like that. And there was a lot of that, as we saw in Tennessee, when he had a lot of trouble with Delanie Walker. He kept trying to strip the ball or undercut the routes and things like that. Whereas if you're just there and you bring him down, you give up the catch, sure, but you're not giving up 30 yards after the catch.
Mm-hmm. Well, they kept another undrafted free agent at safety as well, and that was Marwin Evans, Oak Creek High School, first guy from Milwaukee to play for the Packers in a long time. Don't ask me who the last one was, Mike. Sorry, didn't research that. Good year on special teams, 11 tackles, tied for second. Played 43 snaps on defense, including 25 in the NFC title game. He's got a lot of work to do. I mean, he's not nearly as good as Bryce was at the end of the year. But he's big, 5'11 and a half, 208. He runs 4.47. He's a hitter, you know. He should have a future. I gave him a D. He's got a lot of work to do, but he has the physical makeup to get better.
He made a couple of real nice plays on special teams, especially in kick coverage. He was often the first guy down there when it came to kickoff returns and things like that. I don't know. I don't know enough about him on defense. We need to see more of him. But certainly in training camp, he went from being a guy that probably was going to get cut to working his way onto the team mm-hmm. by improving down the final 3 weeks.
All right. Jermaine Whitehead is on the street future list, so he'll be back in camp. That's where they are on defense.
Well, anything else we should talk about on the D? I looked at the questions, and I'm disappointed in you guys. Not a lot of good ones out there this week, so I think we're going to pass on the questions. Unless you've got anything else, we're at an hour. What do you think?
Let's go to Santana.
All right, some Santana on the way out. This is Smooth off Supernatural.
Thanks for listening. Give yourself this life.